Nevin, you are now live on Lutheran Answers right now. The world is watching, my friend.
In a few months.
Yeah, the world is watching you live in February, 3 months after we recorded this.
Great.
Tell me more. Tell me more about you. How did we meet? How did we meet? Let's start there.
I think we just met through Twitter. So my wife was very active on Twitter for like a few years, and I had no social media, which was probably better. But she kept like tweeting about me and then showing me the tweets she would tweet about me, and then it eventually kind of convinced me I should join. I think that's how we probably met. And then I listened to Lutheran Answers for the OG Lutheran Answers. I listened to that too. So nice. I guess that's how I'm familiar with you.
Wow. And now you've made it, you know, now you're here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I've made it.
Yeah. Dreams do come true.
They do.
Yeah. Your wife, she's some kind of European, right?
Yeah. So my wife is, she was born in Belgium. And she is Belgian, and she spent her entire life growing up in France. And so, like, she'll talk about living in France, and so you'll, and then she speaks French. And so then you'll kind of like, oh, you're French. And then it's no, she's not. She's Belgian. So, yeah. So she's from southern Belgium. That's the French speaking part of Belgium. So the northern part speaks Flemish, the southern part speaks French. And then both her parents are Belgian as well, and her extended family's Belgian. But she grew up in outside of Paris, in like a kind of a suburb of Paris, and that's where she lived most of her life before coming to the United States.
How did you guys meet?
So she had an opportunity to do an exchange program. So she finished college like a year early, her university studies. And so she decided for her last year to do an exchange in the United States. And they had, at the university she was attending in Belgium, they had a list of all these universities she can go to. And the one, you know, so you can go to New York, you can go to LA. And the one that was, and those are sort of hard to get into because everyone wanted to do that. But one of the ones that no one wanted to go to was the University of Wyoming, which is in the highest university in the United States, very cold. And she had known about the town that's in Laramie from a children's book she read when she was younger. And so she was really excited about that was one of the options. So she picked it. And of course she was the only one that applied for it. So she got in. So she was an exchange student in Wyoming for a year. We ended up meeting because I was a graduate student teaching a course and she was an undergraduate student. And we started dating the next semester after I got done teaching her.
Interesting. And now look at you, happily married for a number of years with several children.
Yeah, we've got married 10 years, 4 kids. She's pregnant with the fifth right now.
Oh, so, that's so great.
Yeah, it's like it's at the point now it's probably too early to like announce that publicly, but by February, like we'll be good.
Should be good.
So don't worry about it. Yeah. So yeah, that'll be then that one's due in June. So she's just a little bit pregnant right now.
Yeah. That's really cool. How often do you get to Europe? I'm assuming in 10 years you've been at least once.
Yeah, so she goes to Europe probably like every 18 months, I'd say on average. Sometimes a bit more, sometimes a bit less, but I'd say on average 18 months. I have gone since we've been married. So we went, the wedding was there, which that's kind of an interesting story. But the wedding was there, and since the wedding, I think I've been there twice or three times in 2 years. I think three times in 10 years. So I go about every other trip. I'll go down there, and I'm gonna. I think the next time we go down there is like a big family reunion of hers, and I might try to make it for that. We'll see.
Yeah, very cool. So the series that I'm doing here is called Reforming Faith. And it's just basically how and why people are Lutherans. So
okay.
Now we know a little bit about you. I'd like to ask, have you always been a Lutheran?
No, I'm an adult convert to Lutheranism, and my wife is an adult convert to Lutheranism as well.
Okay, great. So your wife, I'm assuming, was some kind of Catholic?
Yeah. So in both France where she grew up, and then in Belgium where she was born, there's really only the Catholic Church.
You can
go on to like the whatever Lutheran Church exists that we're in, that the AALC and LCMS is in fellowship with, and like look up their congregations in both those countries, and there's like five. And then they're going to be in big cities, and very difficult to, unless you live next to it, like you never go. So the only church that really exists there is, the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church. So she grew up Catholic, never knew anything about, Protestantism. I'm assuming, she covered the Reformation in history class, and it was probably, from a pro-Catholic standpoint, but I'm not entirely sure. But that's all she really was exposed to until she moved to the United States.
How about you? What did you grow up in?
I grew up with sort of one foot in the Methodist Church, and then another foot in the Roman Catholic Church. So my mother, she came from her family was Roman Catholic. My grandparents were very pious Roman Catholics. Attended church regularly. They had eight kids. They lived in a neighborhood growing up. It's kind of crazy to think about and picture now, but the entire neighborhood, it was a suburb of Denver. It was actually in Denver, but every house in the neighborhood was a Roman Catholic family, and they all had between like 8 and 14 kids. So you would walk out the door during the summer and you'd just be playing with like 60 kids. There was within a mile walk, there were, I think, three parishes. There was two elementary schools, and there was one middle school, just in this like really tight neighborhood. So she grew up Roman Catholic. My mother did. I was baptized Roman Catholic as an infant, just a few months old. But then my dad, he was not a very pious church attender, regular church attender. So he was, he kind of grew up in the Methodist Church, and he thought just the Roman Catholics were weird. So he kind of kept doing that. So I just kind of bounced around between those two. I was never confirmed in either church. Never had like a, first confession in the Roman Catholic Church or took communion in the Roman Catholic Church. So it was just baptized in that church. And so I kind of grew up with a foot in both of them, through like middle school and into high school.
Okay. And then you became a Lutheran about what point in your life?
So that's
you said an adult convert.
Yeah. So this is where the story kind of it has to like be told within the context of my wife. So by the time I got to college, I just stopped going to church because my dad worked a job where he was maybe available every like 8 Sundays. So it was just my mom and my brother and I going to church. And then, my brother got into high school and he got busy and he stopped going. So then my mom and I kind of stuck it out as long as possible. But then eventually we just kind of stopped going. So, by the time when we fast forward to the point where I met my wife, I probably hadn't gone to a church service outside of a wedding or a funeral in probably like 4 or 5 years. And so she, when she got to the US, she was, just kind of had some, kind of got sick of, I guess, like this Roman Catholicism as it was being practiced in Europe. And I don't want to say, not exactly what she thinks, but Roman Catholicism outside of some pockets, like some very very specific pockets in Europe. It's very much a cultural thing. So you go during the major holidays, you go during baptisms and confirmations and weddings and funerals. But for the most part, like, there's all these just beautiful Catholic churches all over Europe. And you walk into any one of those on a normal Sunday, and there's no one there. It's just a bunch of people in their, 70s and 80s, and there's no children, there's no families. And so it's sort of this is important, but it's not important enough for you to worry about it. And so, just kind of the culture, she kind of just got pushed away a little bit. So when she came to the United States, she went on this trip pretty early on in her time in Laramie at the University of Wyoming for kind of international students. And they had just some communities, some volunteers from the community that would, go like, hey, we're going to go for a hike. And there was this guy there that she sat down with on a bus that was taking him on some hike, I think up on a mountain or something. And he happened to be the local Reform Presbyterian pastor. And
okay,
they kind of struck up a conversation, and he invited her to church. And I don't know like all my Lutheran church denomination abbreviations, and so I'm even worse with the Reformed ones. But
sure,
from what I gather is you can kind of figure out how like conservative they are, or based on like what their practices are. So they were one of these groups that they only sung psalms. They couldn't use any instrumentation during the singing. Everything was a cappella. They couldn't talk about anything during the sermon that was current event in the world, anything like that. It was all just straightforward. We're going to do this book of the Bible straight through. Next one, no images on the wall. It of the different Reformed church bodies, it's either like the second most or the most conservative there is. So she started attending that, and really got a lot out of it. She learned more about the Bible, which from her Catholic upbringing wasn't like very much emphasized at all. Like the only time she's ever really exposed to it was within the readings, and they were very serious about studying it. So she kept the whole time she was going to the University of Wyoming, and she ended up staying there for 3 years, but she stayed for a master's degree after she got her bachelor's done. And she attended that, and she really got a lot of out of it. And I can't say enough good things about the pastor there. But towards the end of her time there, as we're at this point, we're engaged, we're going to get married, and she just kind of missed the liturgy. And she was talking to her pastor at the time about that. And he's like, oh, you missed the liturgy. Well, you should try the LCMS church. Like, they're pretty good too. So that was our first recommendation to try a Lutheran church, and kind of put the spark in our minds. But at that point, my wife was going to move up to where I was at the time was Washington State. I was working on my PhD, and she was going to move up there, and we're going to get married. And we had to married in the... Oh, go on.
I was going to ask if you were already married at this point, but you just said, no, y'all were planning. She's going to move up there and y'all were going to get married.
Yeah, we're going to get married. And so we got, because we're going to live in the United States, we had to get married in Europe. And the only option was a Roman Catholic church. So we're going to have a Roman Catholic marriage. And this is where things start to get banana cakes. Oh,
you mean like because of her family?
No, not because of her family, but like we are going to get married. We're going to get married in Europe because of her family. Like we're going to move and live in the U.S. Like it was fair to have the wedding in Europe. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I thought you meant like legally, like there was some law I didn't know about.
No. So, but we had to like, the only church was the Roman Catholic Church. So we had to get married there. Sure. And the normal process for getting married in the Roman Catholic Church is it's a year long preparation. And, it might be a little faster than that, but it's like at least several months. Yeah. It's several months of like both of you together in some kind of counseling class. You know, they take it really seriously, which that's
good. Which is good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. But you kind of have to be like not living together, but like within a drivable distance. And we weren't. We were a 12-hour drive away from each other, several plane tickets. Like it just wasn't gonna work. So to get married in the Roman Catholic Church, the way it's supposed to work is you you're supposed to get married in the parish that the bride was baptized in.
Okay.
And so for us to get married, we had to get we had to go through like premarital counseling, like number one. Then we had to have the bishop in the diocese that she was baptized in sign off on it. We had to have the bishop in the diocese that I was currently living in sign off on it. And then we had to have the bishop in the diocese that we're going to get married sign off on it. So we had to go through the premarital counseling and then get three people sign off on it. And so we told him, like, hey, we can't do the normal counseling. Like, we just don't live, you know, unless you want us to live together, we can't do it. And so what happened is, and I was talking to like this, I forgot who I was even emailing. I think it was like some priest within, the diocese that I was living in at the time. And so he goes, okay, we got this like weekend retreat you guys can do. It's like 4 days. It's really intensive. And you know, that's like the plan B. So we sign up for it and a giant snowstorm happens like the day before that's supposed to occur. She can't fly out. The airport snowed in. Like, we missed the thing and they don't have another one scheduled. And so now we're starting to get like worried, like, can we even get married? And so I go talk to them and they said, okay, option C, you're going to go sit down in front of a priest. He's going to talk to you and he's either going to let you do it or not. And so, you know, yeah. And so it went from like several months of counseling down to like, it's going to be an afternoon conversation. I hope you guys are ready for it. So, my mom grew up like Catholic, just is like, lie about everything. And, so we meet with them and the guy is, he was the priest at the church right next to where I lived. It was a couple like blocks away, and he had been retired for like 4 or 5 years and they were short of priests. They pulled him out of retirement and he was just done. Like, he was not happy to be back. And so we meet with them and he's like, you know, first question he goes is like, are you able to perform the duties of marriage? And like, I remember my wife, you know, my fiance at the time, and I just like look at each other and we're like, yeah. And he goes, okay, good. Do you want kids? And we're like, yeah. He's like, all right, great. And he's like literally checking off boxes as he's going through this. And then the third question he asks my wife is he goes, you know, how often do you go to mass? And she's like, well, I was born Catholic. I was confirmed Catholic. But when I moved to the United States, like, I started going to a Reformed church and I'm still going to the Reformed church. And he just goes, whoa. Occasionally. And he checks off the bot. And he writes that down. Occasionally. And then he asks me and he goes, well, how often do you go to church? And I go, well, you know, I was baptized Catholic and my wife's, my mother was Catholic and like, I'm telling the whole story. And he just goes, no, like, infrequently. And he writes that down on the form. And then he, the last question he asked us, he goes, if you have kids, are you going to raise them in the church? And we go, you know, absolutely. We're going to raise them, with Christ in mind, but we don't know what church. And he goes, oh, that's okay. And he like checks the box. And then he literally gets like this like seal and he stamps it. And he goes,
amazing.
He goes, congratulations. The bishop will sign off on it. You know, you should be good to go. He goes, let me just tell you one thing before you leave. He goes, I do this with a lot of couples. A lot of them end up divorced. I got a pretty good feeling about you. But if it doesn't work out, it's not my fault. And yeah, and then we went, got married, and she moved up to where I was living. We got married in Belgium. It was a priest from Africa. I forgot what country that was. They kind of this thing where they'll have these huge churches in Africa, and then they kind of do this like rotation through Europe for a few years. It's kind of like a mission, honestly. where you're in these, you're seeing like four rural parishes and like no one comes. So he ended up, and he was great. I have no idea what I agreed to during the ceremony. It was all in French. I don't speak French. I have no idea what they were asking me or what was going on. So, that was our Catholic wedding. And then
any desire to learn French?
Yeah, I am super busy, and I'm bad at English. And so, it's like every now and then I'll have some time. I'll start trying to like do it on like Duolingo. And it's really hard to stick. Like if I go to France, I'll learn it. After like 3 weeks, I start picking it up, and then I come back to the United States and forget it all. So it's hard with
that's without been anyone. It's been my hang up. English has been my hang up with Greek. I've been studying Greek in sim this semester, and it's just like, it's such a slog because they're like, you know how in English you have the predicate nominative? And I'm like, no, I don't know what any of those words mean, actually.
I'm really, really bad at grammar and my wife, who's not an unnative speaker, always corrects my grammar and my spelling. But not like not nicely. Like she's kind of mean about it. So
Your kids speak French? Does she speak French to them?
She does speak, well, she mostly like yells French at him. So, but they also like, they go back to Europe, like within a few days, they're all speaking French. And then, it's something that I wish we can go there more often, but it's so expensive. Yeah. And it's really, really hard hauling, you know, four kids on an international flight for 8 hours. It's a very difficult thing to do.
They
need to, you know, the problem is though, like we're homeschooling and, so we're within the curriculum, we're doing classical education. So we're trying to teach Latin and like trying to do English, Latin and French. It's just, we're not that good of teachers, I think at the moment.
So you guys, you get married in Belgium, you're back in the United States. Where do we go from here? How do we end up in the Lutheran Church?
Yeah, so we came back to where we were, which is Pullman, Washington. That's where we're living. And my wife had remembered that conversation she had with her Reform Presbyterian pastor that he recommended we try a Lutheran church. And I will premise this way. Do you know where Pullman is?
No.
Okay. So if you were to walk 6 miles to the east from Pullman, Washington, you'd run into a town called Moscow, Idaho.
Okay.
And are you familiar with Moscow, Idaho?
Not at all. No.
So that's where this guy named Doug Wilson lives.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. So my wife had already kind of been like exposed to him a little bit from like the Presbyterian church. Like a lot of the people in there were big fans, and she was just like creeped out by him. So when,
yeah, I was going to say, when, I know your wife and I know that she's a huge fan.
Yeah. So when we moved to Pullman, it was like, well, we can't go to a Presbyterian church here because there's a good chance it's going to be creepy, and we weren't going to do creepy. So she was not wanting to do that. And then also she remembered what our pastor, you know, had said about, her pastor had said about the Tri Lutheran church. So there was this LCMS church in Pullman, and, we went there first service, and it is still like one of the most beautiful services I've ever been to in my entire life. And part of the reason for that is they had just a lot of like really good musicians at this church. And so they had an organist, you know, everything was LCMS, Lutheran service book, chanting, everything you could chant, really good song selection, and the organ was going. But like the services we had attended, and there's only three that there's three or four we went to. The first three, in addition to that, it was just sort of like whoever showed up that day would also join it. And so there was like a mini orchestra every time. So you'd have like someone with like a cello or someone with like a French horn there or a viola, just randomly kind of back there with the organ. And I mean, it not that that's like necessary in worship or like that, but it was just really cool to see that.
Awesome.
It was, yeah. It was really cool. It was really cool. So we went there and like just really enjoyed it. Really good, like solid liturgy, good preaching, everything about it was just great. And just like such a good introduction to what like Lutheranism could be. So then we did go to four services. So then we go to service number two, and it's absolutely packed, like way more packed than ever. And the pastor says like, "Hey, it's my last service ever. I'm retiring." And, yeah. And so we didn't know that. So we ended up, you know, that was his last service. Is a good one. And we went up to him afterwards and like, "Hey, you know, sorry about this, but, we're kind of thinking about becoming Lutherans." And he's like, "Oh yeah, I can't do anything for you." So he gave us a book. I don't even remember if we have it still, but I don't even remember what it was, but he gave us a book on like, what is Lutheranism? And then he said like, "I can't do anything for you. I'm moving to Florida. The next guy's coming in, talk to him." And the third service, you know, which, you know, that's fine. That's what's he going to do? So the third service we went to the next Sunday, it was led by the elders. They didn't have a pastor. The guy hadn't arrived yet. So I think we just did like a matin service on Sunday, and it wasn't a divine service. And I don't think there was any sermon. It was just the readings and then just doing matins. And that was good too. You know, that was also great. And then the fourth one happened. And, that was this new guy they hired. And I think, I don't know, but it's in a college town. So I think they're looking for someone that was young and hip. And he was fresh out of seminary, and he gets up there. He threw out like first day in the, and I mean, I know you're going through seminary, so this is kind of like
taking notes.
Really, you know, when they say like, "Don't do this your first parish, like, or your first church," yeah. Like, this is what not to do. So he threw out the liturgy completely. He threw out the, and that meant like, following like the order of the divine services, like that was gone. He threw out like the liturgical calendar. So whatever the reading was supposed to be for that day, he's like, "We're just going to start Genesis 1 and work our way through, guys." And then organ was gone, and the hymnal was thrown out too. So he got rid of all three of those, like just first service, got rid of all that. And it was packed. It was as packed as the previous pastor's last service, because everyone's like, "Oh, we're going to welcome the new pastor here to the church." And he got up there with a guitar and started singing. Like, I kid you not, he had a guitar and he was singing "Jesus Loves Me." And he kept going like, "Come on, guys, come on, everyone, let's get up and clap." And it was like, if you could like smell cringe in the air, that's what it was yeah. like in there. It was really, really, really uncomfortable. And my wife and I were just like, we're not going back to this. And so that was the only Lutheran church within like 3 hours. So there was no other option. And we ran into some people that we had met through that church a couple months later, and they said that the attendance had gone from like 150 a week down to like 20 at that church. Yeah. It was just complete crash. And I remember like a couple of years after, a year after I left Pullman, I just like went to their website and they had a different pastor in there. So I'm hoping that the ship got turned around, but it was really, really bad.
Golly.
And I don't remember the guy's name. I don't remember any of that, but it was like one of the most uncomfortable situations I've ever been in my life.
We, in Sim, we talk about this a lot, about going into a church. And generally, it's actually, when we have this discussion, we're talking about going the other way, right? You step into a church and they've done COWO for 20 years. And I tell people all the time, I'm a big liturgy guy all the way. I don't like contemporary worship at all. I don't think it's edifying. I don't think it's useful. I don't think it does what people think it does. But At the same time, I understand that if this church has been doing contemporary worship for the last 15, 20 years, if I walk in on day one and throw out the guitars and get an organ and get the LSB, the only thing that's going to happen is I'm going to lose my job, right?
Yeah.
Like you just, you can't make huge changes at the drop of a hat like that, man. Churches are, they're institutional and like they take a while to kind of turn around.
Yeah. And I think they thought that maybe the guy would, I don't know why they got him, but I mean, because you're fresh out of seminary, you think they could have like called it, hey, we have a guy retiring. We have like 150 people on a normal Sunday. Like for a lot of, pastors, thinking about a call, that's a pretty good thing mm-hmm. to walk into. Like it was a very stable, financially stable. It was in like a nice town with like lots of things to do, good education. Like it's just so many things going for it. And that's what happened. So, but that was really weird. Then we didn't know what to do. So we had we lived in this like really small, like, commuter town from Pullman. Like it was literally a population of, like 400 people. And we knew the guy because I worked with him, that was the pastor there. So it was like the, community Bible church, and he's a really nice guy. So we're like, let's just try that. And so we spent the next, 2.5 years going to this non-denominational Baptist light, community church with about probably like 15 people there on a Sunday, and with like Pastor Bob, and that's kind of where we went for 2.5 years. And I think that the time spent in that kind of Baptist church is what really convinced us that we needed to be Lutheran more than anything else.
Interesting. Tell me more.
I don't think at this point my wife and I were both like not very theologically literate, and there was just so many things in there we just did not agree with, and that the pastor couldn't explain, the other people in the church couldn't explain. They just had a lot of teachings and practices that we really, really just did not feel comfortable with. And
I gotta really push you for an example here.
I know, I got so many. I'll get there. So, I guess like the first thing that kids came up with is on, I remember a Bible study one time we were going through. So, it was a non-denominational one, which that means is like, no creeds, just the Bible and me and Jesus. And we're going to knock this one out. And so you have a lot of things that aren't explicitly part of their theology, but that a lot of people believe. So like the whole premillennial dispensationalism stuff, like that gets like the pastor's not going to say that's bad, but he's not going to say it's good either. So you have some people that go to the church that believe in that. And this kind of stuff gets in there. So I think the first time I was like, I just don't like this, is we were in a Bible study and we're going through Daniel, and he had this diagram. I wish I had it, but it had like all the prophecies of Daniel and what every single one of those meant. And then like how we can like look to that to happen in our lifetime and how like the world's going to end any moment. And I remember, so it's like, oh, when he's talking about the dragon with this many horns, what that actually refers to is this. And everyone in the Bible study is like, oh yeah, like totally. And I'm more like, I don't think it says that. And so like, we reread it and it's still like really, really not clear. And he didn't really have an answer. He's like, yeah, it sounds confusing, but there's these really smart Bible people that say that it's actually this. And so that's what we're basing our theology on. And so that was kind of like the start of it. For me is, the Bible's literally true. Here's a really hard passage. This is the explanation we're going to go on. And we're not going to talk about what other people might think it is. We're not going to talk about the church history. It's just this guy that, you know, wrote this one study Bible. He's the authority on it. And, you know, he couldn't really give a justification for it. Just that's what the study Bible says. That's what we're gonna go with. And so that was kind of the first thing that really got us, you know, that kind of started like, okay, I'm getting a little uncomfortable. And then, the second time that we got really just, this isn't right for us is they did communion one time. And that was really uncomfortable because they had to make a point of like, communion is really important. It's a, they don't use,
ordinance.
It's an ordinance of Christ. And so we had to do an entire service, and you know, the services were like song, giant Bible study, song. And that was the order of the service. And then there was like a prayer time where like the kids would come up and say cute things. And the entire Bible study for that or that day was just on communion before communion. And there was this balancing act of like, this is really important. So it's like a, you know, we got a balance here. Like, this is really important. Jesus said to do it. And we take the Bible literally. This part of the Bible's figurative and we can't take it too seriously. So they had and it was, and you could tell he's struggling with it because he's trying to explain that this is important and we should do it more often than we are doing it because it was like once a year. But we can't do it on like an important day. Like we can't do it on Easter because then it seems like we're elevating it too much. And then we can't, we also can't look more into it than just symbology or we're elevating it too much. And so he had this really uncomfortable sermon about trying to, and it just didn't make any sense. And, we also like he forgot to get juice beforehand, and so he had like crackers and juice, and he's like, "We don't have any juice." And I was like, "I can run back to my house and grab some wine." He's like, "No, we can't do wine. and he literally said, "You know, this is only symbolic. So we, if we had to, we could do this with potato chips and soda pop," is what he said.
No.
I'm pretty sure my wife and I didn't take communion with them because we kind of got like a little friendly argument and I was like, how can we take this literally and not believe this? And he was like, well, you know, okay, well, there's the door and you know, if he's the door, he can't be. And, and I remember, I think I mentioned John 6 and I was like, well, can you help me with that? And he's like, well, that's spiritual. But it was clear that like he was just believing what he had been told. He hadn't really thought this through that very much. He couldn't just say, "Well, it's God's word. Let's go with it." And so it was really just uncomfortable for us. And I think we chose not to do communion because we didn't agree with that, and we couldn't say why. And then the sort of like the last big thing was when our kid was born, we're like, can we get the baby baptized? We were both baptized infants. And he's like, no, we don't do that. You have to make a decision. And the decision theology like always bothered me because like I had been, you know, going to church. I remember believing it as a kid. And like, I stopped going to church for a while, but then I came back and then I still felt like I believed. And I can't point to a time where like I made the decision and he was like, no, you have to figure out that point. Like I remember at 6, I made the decision and it's like, well, I don't remember that. And so that was the whole thing with the baptism. And I'm like, there's gotta be people that just like go to church their whole life and that's just all they know. And they're still Christians. They can't have like this huge lapse in faith. And that's what they're always looking for. They're always looking for like, you know, I was a drug addict and you know, I doing coke in the street for blood. And then I found Christ and everything turned around and like, there's just so many people don't have that life story. And
well, in decision theology churches, cause I grew up in a decision theology church and the way they handle that with children is that they tell children that you're not Christians until you make a decision.
Yeah. And
so you're kind of when you're about 6 or 7 years old, I was 7 in my mom's car on the way home from church. And I was like, all right, well, I think I want to be a Christian now, I guess, you know? And so they kind of force you into it.
Yeah, and that's what it felt like. And, you know, I remember them. I think what really made them mad is when we were talking about this whole thing, you know, they told my wife and I that our baptisms didn't count. And like, we should, like, well, we can't baptize your kids, but we can baptize you. And we're like, no, we've already been baptized. And that really kind of pushes over the edge. And I remember, you know, like the last, I don't know, the year we were there, like I was getting close to finish up my PhD, and we were just like, we got to suffer through this. We got to suffer through it. And it wasn't all bad. Like, they did take the Bible very seriously. And you know, both my wife and I like really did learn like the story of the Bible more thoroughly than we had before. So we did a couple of Bible studies, like a survey of like Old and New Testament. And like, that was helpful. There was a lot of that, you know, most 90% of the Bible, if you have Christians of denominations, they're not going to disagree on what it's saying. It's just the certain key things that's a problem. So I don't think it was bad for us, but it certainly like taught us that, you know, this is not what we believe. And this is also, not what we want to be doing. So the last amount of time we were in there, just it was kind of painful, like getting through it. But then we moved, and that was kind of like the next chapter.
Nice. Yeah. It does a good job, situations like that, of teaching you, I guess, how important it is, to be embedded in a Christian community that does believe the correct things, right? That does have sound doctrine and sound practice. And like, it's difficult away from that. And you should always strive to be in a community that's as close to that, I guess, as you can get, you know?
Yeah. And it was frustrating too, because you know, it wasn't something we could debate or talk about either. Like, that's the other thing too, is every single Lutheran pastor I've met, if you went up to them and like, not in like a jerk way, but like, you're honestly like, hey, I don't disagree with, I don't understand this, you know, can you help me through it? Like, that is, makes them so excited. That like, there's nothing that makes them happier than like walking you through this. And, if you were to ask the people in that church and the pastor, and he's still a dear friend of mine, so I don't want to come off as like a jerk to him, but he went to like a Bible school, and you know, that's where he got his where he, you know, became a pastor. And you know, he could tell you, you know, why did Jesus die on the cross, like how do you be saved, those sorts of things. But when you start to really get in the weeds of theology, he didn't have an answer. And so I remember, like, as we're kind of pressing him on communion, as we're pressing him on baptism, as we're pressing him on, you know, end times theology, he there was just nothing more there. Like, he couldn't really walk us through that. He couldn't provide the answers. All he knew is what he had been told. And whenever I've talked with theology with pastors, I mean, that's, you know, we go to different conferences within my district, and when the pastors get together, they're all just drinking beer and like arguing about this stuff 24/7. I mean, this is what this is why they went to seminary for a large part. I mean, part of it was just to argue about theology all day, and then they also got to serve people and help people preach law and gospel. So there's other benefits too, but it's something that they all love and they really enjoy. And it just, that was kind of missing, I thought.
Yeah. So you guys moved, you got your PhD. Are you doctor?
Yeah. I'm like, the way I explain it is like, I'm a doctor, but if I'm flying on an airplane, I don't put doctor down as my title, because as soon as I do that, someone's going to have a heart attack and I'm going to be in a lot of trouble. So,
Did you see that SNL sketch with, Nate Bargatze is hosting just recently, and, somebody has a medical issue on a plane and they're like, is anybody a doctor? And he stands up and he's like, well, I'm a lawyer.
It's like, no, I haven't seen.
It's the second best profession. And then another guy stands up and he's like, well, now hang on, I'm an engineer.
No, I haven't seen that one. I've been wanting though to fly Lufthansa, because Lufthansa, it's German and they take their like titles very seriously. And if you fly on them, I'd be Mr. Doctor Professor. And it'd be Mr. Doctor Professor Nevin. And so I'd have that. You know, they could go, oh, that's not a medical doctor, and they could solve that. But yeah,
what kind of doctor PhD. Are you?
I am a doctor of philosophy. No, it's agronomy, the study of crops. So agriculture. I work at agriculture.
Okay. All right. Cool. Well, I'm going to title this episode Doctor Nevin Lawrence.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I get that sometimes.
So you guys move. I'm assuming you get a great job in crops.
Yeah.
And there's a Lutheran church nearby. Is that just basically how it goes?
Yeah. Well, we moved to, so I live in Eastern Wyoming and I work in Western Nebraska, and, there's a lot of Lutheran churches out here actually. So, that was quite plentiful. But as we were like getting ready to move, I remember my wife and I actually like made a list of like what we wanted in a church. And, so it was, I it was like six things like that. So it was like biblical inerrancy, liturgical. I don't even think we knew like the title, like baptismal regeneration at that point, but it was like infant baptism, real presence in the Lord's Supper. I think one of them is they don't hate homeless people.
yeah, solid.
Well, that was actually, not the pastor at our Baptist Light Church, but there was a particular member in there that just, we were kind of like a couple hours south of Spokane. Every time she went on like to Spokane, she would come back and just complain about like how dirty and gross the homeless people were. And it was and then at the same time, you know, both her kids couldn't hold down a job and they were like living with her and they were on government support and all that kind of stuff. And
right.
And nothing against them. They had their issues, they had their demons, but it was sort of like the only difference between them and the only difference between like your kids and these other kids is like you can still keep them in your house. Like that's literally the only thing keeping them from being on the street. But so that was one of them. And then, I think it was also like, no rainbow flags. I think that might've been like the sixth thing. But I could be wrong about that, but it was definitely like liturgical, biblical inerrancy, real presence, baptized babies. And so when we moved to the town we were living in, you know, I think if there was an Anglican church, we would have checked it out. And at this point we don't know anything about any of these churches, but that would probably have been an option. So, we were looking at the Roman Catholic Church, Lutheran Church, and, that was it. There was no, my wife, I think would not have done Orthodox just because she had gone to a couple and she was kind of weirded out by them, but, she has
very make you stand the whole time.
Yeah. She's, like, I don't know. She's like, well, it's like the, you know, I don't know. My wife's got strong opinions for weird reasons. Like she won't like certain cars because they have like a mean face. And so that's kind of like the reason why she didn't want to try an Orthodox church. Like it just, I don't know. So, but it was, I think we would have tried Anglicanism was there, but they didn't have that. So we went to the Lutheran church, loved it. And then the next day we went to the Catholic church and we went to both, I think three times each alternating. And both groups were like really welcoming and like, oh, you're new here, like, you know, like tell me about yourself. And like they both groups actually took us out to eat after Sunday at I think at Denny's. And I think the Catholics did it first, and then the next Sunday the Lutherans did it. But then we ran into the Catholics at Denny's with the Lutherans, so it was kind of like it's a bit kind of awkward. But it was fun though. But the the thing that kind of sold us, though, it was because at this point, like, we weren't even talking to the pastor. We weren't doing that kind of stuff. It's just like the Catholics were like, you got to come here because we're a really good Catholic church. We're so good that when a priest is like done a really good job, they send them here as a reward. Like, we're the good church. And so we only get the good pastors. And that just kind of turned my wife off quite a bit.
Yeah,
and one of the things that she remembers, and I've experienced this, is if you walk into like a Catholic church, there's always some people in that church that are watching people come in to see how they anoint themselves the holy water before they walk in, you know, before they go into their pew, how far down are they bowing before they go sit down at the cross? You know, are they, it's just little things like that. And you are being judged on that when you walk in. And, and at the Lutheran church, we really didn't get any of that. So we decided, okay, we're going to try this. And we met with the pastor, and he started he didn't have a adult confirmation class going at that time. He sometimes does, sometimes he doesn't. So we just met in our home. We went to the small catechism, and it was like this weird experience because, when he was trying to explain to us like what Lutherans believe, it was just a whole bunch of like, oh yeah, we already believe that. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. There was not a single thing that we discussed that was difficult for us to agree with, or that took some argumentation, anything like that. It was all just, that makes perfect sense. And we believe that. It was exactly right for us. There was no issues with it at all. And we had like some hard questions, but it wasn't about like Lutheran theology specifically, like things like what happens when like a unbaptized baby dies, you know, if someone commits suicide, do they go to hell? Those sorts of like hard questions you get. Right. And I don't think those are particularly like Lutheran questions, you know, the great thing about being a Lutheran, you say, well, the Bible doesn't say anything about that. So we can only speculate. And, you know, but this is what I think might happen. And that was kind of the answers we got, which was really great. And so that's how we became Lutheran, and then we got confirmed in it. And then I didn't have like my doubts, but at that time, this is kind of another story kind of related to it, is I was really worried about like whether or not we made the right decision. And it wasn't that there was something I was doubting particularly, but like the reason I want to go to a particular denomination is I think they're correct, not because I like it. And so I was having doubts, like, you know, maybe we should have spent more time at the Catholic Church. And while I'm doing this, I have a 30-minute commute home every day. And I can't listen to radio because it's terrible. And, you know, the only thing I would listen to is either NPR, which is not good.
Correct.
Or I would catch, Catholic Answers on the radio. And so like, as I'm having these doubts, I'm listening to like a whole bunch of Catholic Answers, and I'm like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Like, that's a good point they're making. And so then I was trying to find like a rebuttal of that. And I couldn't, like, there was no rebuttal. And I couldn't just be just pestering my pastor all the time with these questions. And so I was trying to look up just something on the internet and, to answer these, you know, these questions, you know, praying to the saints and things like that. And that's how I stumbled upon Jordan Cooper and started listening to his podcast. And he had a couple of real early episodes where he was just addressing these like head on. And it was, I think it was mostly, Chemnitz, response to the, he was just working his way through the, I think mostly, citing Chemnitz and his response to Trent, but it was, that sort of like solidified me even more. It was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Like,
that's awesome.
You know, it really did help though. And that's actually that went from like, oh yeah, they make a good point with the praying to the saints, to what the heck is a treasury of merit? Like, it just like, oh, here's like something else I've never heard of. Yeah. That's even crazier than what I thought they believed in.
They do that. They do that.
They really do. They really do.
I saw this, and I'm not saying that this is pure Catholic dogma and doctrine or whatever, so much as it's just some like terminally online tradcath that just really needs to touch grass. But I saw this Twitter thread the other day where it was like this guy was talking about the thief on the cross. And then some other guy was like, what's really crazy is that he knew Jesus when they were little kids and he was this kind of person growing up and all this. And he had like this whole like big fan fiction about the thief on the cross, you know.
The Catholic answers thing, though, that what really got me is like, as I'm kind of, I'd be listening to them and I'd be listening to Jordan Cooper at the same time. I caught this episode one time and this guy was calling up to know about what indulgences were. And he's like, I heard like all these horrible things that Lutherans say about indulgences. And so they kind of, the guy is like, oh, like that's all myths. That's not how they work. And he kind of gives this like very modern day interpretation of what's going on with indulgences. And he goes like, okay, did that help that answer your question? And the guy calling's like, oh yeah, it did. Can you still get an indulgence? And he goes, you can still get indulgences, but they've been very scaled back because there were some abuses occurring during the 16th century. And it's just like, I could not stop laughing. And I was like, oh yeah, this all is just like propaganda. This is all propaganda.
Yeah. If you really want to read, like just exactly that propaganda, go to the Catholic Answers website and read about, they have an article. I'll see if I can find it and put it in the show notes, but it's specifically indulgences during the Reformation. And they're like, oh no, you may have heard this common refrain that Tetzel was going around saying, for every coin in the coffer that rings, another soul from purgatory springs. And that's not true. And indulgences were never sold to build the basilica, and everything Martin Luther said was wrong and all this, right? And that's what they say, like up front, is that, oh, this is just a big misunderstanding that Protestants have, and none of this is really true. And then down at the end, they're like, the thing Tetzel was actually saying was every time you put a coin in the coffer, then someone can get out of purgatory with the indulgence. You know, it's like, but that's, you're just using different words to say the thing that we're saying you said.
It's wild. It really is. It really is. And so I don't know. I kind of, when I'm driving home, if I don't have any podcasts to listen to, I kind of bounce back between listening to that until I get frustrated, and then listening to NPR until I get frustrated, and then just driving in silence. So that's kind of my normal thing.
Nice. Well, there's this great podcast called Lutheran Answers that...
Well, I haven't seen any new episodes for a while. Are you going to do something about that?
I'm working on it. Actually, believe it or not, I'm working on it right now.
Oh, all right. That's good to hear.
Yeah, yeah. Nevin, thank you so much for being on, man.
Sure.
This was a good time. Yeah. Anything we can do for you? Anything we can pray about or promote or anything at all?
Not really. Just the normal stuff.
Okay.
I don't got like a thing. I don't have a website or anything. I got my Twitter and I'm, you know, constantly thinking if I should delete that or not. That's about it. So nothing.
Same, dude. Same. Golly.
Yeah.
What a trash website.
I heard
I've learned that today. Yeah. I bring it on myself.
I heard a comedian say one time that like, when the internet got started, the only two people that used it were scientists to do science and pornographers to do pornography. And that was okay. That was fine. There's no one else on there. But after a while, the science started getting mixed with the pornography and everything went down. And... I kind of agree with that. I think that's where we're at right now.
Yeah. 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 Awesome, buddy. Well, we'll see you on the Twitter.
Yeah. And this is like really bad. Like you could just cut it. It's fine. So we'll go on to something else, but thank you for having me.
Yeah, man.